All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Real Talk Podcast. I'm here with my guest today, Angelo Nichols from Wildwood, New Jersey. Hi, Angelo. How you doing?
How you doing, guy?
So, basically, we took some time off. The show hasn't been around for a while, and we found ourselves a new home here at 98.7 The Coast. I'm very excited to be here. And basically, Angelo, I want to bring you on because, I mean, who better to tell the story of Wildwood than the guy who not only grew up here his entire life, but had very many businesses, which the majority of them were very successful for a substantial amount of time. Like, you did really well. Yep. You have a lot to talk about. And we don't have a lot of time to tell all your stories because you have so many things to talk about. So I basically want to just start from the beginning. Again, welcome to the show. I'm happy that you're here.
And I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. So we're going to jump right into it. And we're going to talk about, you know, from what I understand is your father was, he's kind of started off here. Is this like he started everything off? I know you have brothers.
Yes.
And I know that you have a massive family who's done a whole bunch of things, but your dad kind of like said, hey, you know, am I to understand one day he said, hey, we're going to take over Wildwood. We're going to build our empire and build our business from there.
Well, it was actually my grandfather.
Your grandfather.
My grandfather was Angelo Nichols as well.
Okay.
We were living in Chicago. And he decided he wanted to look at Atlantic City, actually, and visited Atlantic City. And back in those days, I think it was late 40s after the war, he took a trolley from Atlantic City that came right down into Wildwood, which I don't know if you remember, but there used to be tracks here on, I think it was either Atlantic or Pacific Avenue. And he had liked Wildwood as well. And he placed my dad in Wildwood. He liked it better than the Atlantic City boardwalk.
Wow, okay. I actually didn't know that about you or your family. That's great. So, you know, he decides to come down here and, you know, no secret to the world. You own, at one point in time, Nichols Midway Pier.
That is correct.
A very successful business. A lot of Supercade being probably Supercade your number
was,
one.
That was my baby.
Yeah, everybody that knows you knows that you were the guy who ran the Derby.
The horse race game.
The roof is on fire.
The roof, the pumping out the prizes.
Pumping out the prizes, all the slogans, all the pictures, all the races and all the fun, more importantly. So, but you know, I don't want to skip too far ahead. So, you know, your dad, your grandfather says, hey, we're gonna start business here in Wildwood, New Jersey. Yep. And what year was that? Do you remember?
It was late 49, something like that. Because I was born in 51 and I have pictures of me as being held by my dad on the boardwalk. So...
And did he jump right into it, or did he know he was coming here for the boardwalk, or was more he liked the area and you guys kind of drifted into the business?
Actually, my grandfather set up my mom with a handwriting analysis booth around Robertson, the boardwalk, and then my dad got bored of just sitting there and decided to put a guess your weight and age stand up on what was called Fun Pier back then. Owned by Mr. Barnes, Joseph Barnes. And then he started to do that, and he liked it. And then we ended up putting up a different game here and there, and we all the brothers started working in amusement games.
Yes, you have two older brothers.
Yes.
And I imagine being the younger brother, you always had to work a little bit harder. At least that's the way that the stories go. You know, there was always the younger brother always has to, you know, prove himself, prove his worth. He always feels that he does anyway. So, I mean, I imagine that three of you together was very successful and you guys had a great time doing it. So tell me a little bit about the relationship between you and your brothers and, you know, getting into the business in Wildwood, New Jersey. I know you guys opened up a whole bunch of rides, arcades, but where did it start?
We first started with the first Bushel game, also near Robertson, the boardwalk. And actually, my brother John was the operator. And then Steve had another game down, I think, around Sportland Pier at the time.
Steve is the oldest brother.
Steve is my oldest brother. John is the middle brother. I'm the youngest brother. And later on, my dad tossed me actually into the game and said, you're running this game. And that's how I started running an amusement game. And I loved it.
How old were you when you first started running amusement games?
I think around 10.
Wow. Okay. I mean, you know. And we're going to get into the difference between Wildwood then and now. And not a lot of 10-year-olds today can jump into a business, let alone manage it, run it, and have it succeed at the same time. But you worked at a very young age. And, you know, it did show throughout the history of time, being that you guys was like a landmark of Wildwood. Anybody that came to places like Supercade, and you know, as we get into the interview, Dracula's Castle,
that was a great
that's just one of the biggest attraction. Things of all time, and we're gonna get there. But so bottom line, so what we can gather so far, your grandfather comes here, brings your father with him. You guys come as well. Everybody's kind of doing their own thing in the beginning. Don't know what they want to do. You guys open up a few games just to give it a try. You
personally,
you personally end up running at 10 years old with your brothers. And you guys just kind of say, hey, you know what? We might have something here. Was there a lot of, because in today's world, there's a lot of competition. There's so many games and arcades all over the place. It's crazy. Well, back then, was there as much?
No. Back then, there was a law that there was only so many licenses issued, certain sort of like a liquor license is today. And if you wanted an amusement game, you'd have to buy somebody else's license if they wanted to get out of the business. And we ended up, before the law was changed, which we were instrumental in changing the law, we had 15 games along the boardwalk from Roberts all the way down to Maury's Pier in North Wildwood.
Wow, that's quite a radius, actually.
Yeah.
So you guys got the licenses that you needed to obtain to run all your games. Tell us some of the first couple games that you guys opened. Well, I know you mentioned Bushel Baskets.
The first one was the throw a ball into a bushel basket, and then we opened up where you knocked the bottles down. We had a balloon dart game. We had
so the classics that you can see today, they meaning that they haven't changed so much. There are games back then that there are today, right?
Well, it has changed.
It has.
Yes. They don't allow the bushel game anymore in the state of New Jersey for different reasons. And today's games on the boardwalk are mostly race games.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that back then it was that people had a lot more fun?
Yes.
Walking the boardwalk?
A lot more fun.
And I know everything was cheaper, of course, but then the cost of living was cheaper as well. But was it just because of the price and the finances behind it, or was Wildwood just in general a better place to walk around?
It was a much better place to walk around because I could go back prior to being put into my first game. I used to shine shoes on a Wildwood boardwalk. Started around 7.
Wow, so you started work even before 10 then?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so me and a friend of mine whose dad owned a game on the boardwalk, we decided to go in the shoe shining business, which back then it was lucrative because people wore shoes, not like today, they wear sneakers. And we used to shine shoes near a place called the Starlight Ballroom, which was a hop dance back in the 60s. I think it was near Cedar in the boardwalk. And we did that for quite a while. And an interesting story that I'd like to tell you is that we were younger. There was older kids that were shining shoes, and we were not allowed to go near to the Starlight Ballroom. We had to be like a block away, or otherwise we'd be harassed by them. And one night, everybody was in an uproar because there's not going to be a dance. And this is a true story, and you can see it here in the Wildwood Museum. Some people went to Philly and brought back a DJ to do the show because something happened to the DJ that was supposed to run a show. It turned out that was Dave Clark, the famous Dave Clark, who ended up going back to Philly and started with Sam Katz and opened up American Bandstand. It was based off of the Starlight Ballroom right here on this boardwalk.
Wow. And there's a little bit of history for you guys. For those of you guys that don't know the history of Wildwood, even me myself, knowing Angelo his entire life, and you know, even being a part of Wildwood for over 20 years, I can't go as far back. And that's why I bring you on the show, you know, to explain this, give us a little bit of a throwback, take us back in time and tell us the great news about Wildwood. So, you know, all these great things, Starlight Ballroom, you mentioned before, Nikki's Games.
Well, yeah, they named our games Nikki's Games because in Chicago there was a place called Nikki's Chevrolet with the backwards K. Mm-hmm. So we started using that logo here in Wildwood.
And for those of you guys that don't know, Angelo Nichols, that is his nickname, Nicky.
That's correct.
Nicky Nichols.
More people know me as Nick Wildwood than anybody as Angelo Nichols.
And you know something? When you have Wildwood after your name, you know that you've been a part of probably everything that there is to be a part of in the Wildwood history of life.
Well, I actually grew up here my entire life.
And you've had a lot of experiences. The next thing that I want to talk about, And I don't want to go too far ahead because we mentioned, you know, Nikki's games. We've mentioned that you've worked at a young age. We've mentioned that your grandfather and your father made a decision not to pursue any type of business in Atlantic City, but thought this was a much cleaner town at the time.
Absolutely.
You know, whose idea was to build Castle Dracula? Where did that even start?
Well, in 1976, when we purchased the west portion of what was Cedar Skellinger Corporation and the Combs, there was several stores, a merry-go-round, which we ended up taking out to add stores. And at the time, there was a castle in Brigantine called Brigantine Castle. And it was very famous. People were coming from all over to go to it. And we decided that we could build a castle that's much better than that one. And we started to see how we can put it together. We got people from all over, that some people who actually worked for Disney, who retired and were in this area.
And wow. And would you say that that's probably the biggest success of your family history was Dracula's? Because, I mean, I've never seen anything like it after and never heard about anything like it before its time.
Actually, we had a commercial that's quite kind of said that. And
really?
Just a basic story. When we were putting the castle together, there was a guy, I forgot his name, it was Bob something. He did Turner Broadcast, the old movies. Mm-hmm. He was the guy that told you what the movie's about, who's in the movie. He came down here. He did all our sound effects.
Wow!
For the castle, which every sound effect was created by him. And then putting that up, I think we spent close to $1.5 million to put Castle Dracula up.
Wow. I mean, like we mentioned, landmark and nothing before its time, nothing after its time. You have a plug-in that you can that you like to do. You like to do the opening, is it, for Castle Dracula?
Well, we created also from people from Disney created a animatronic robot who was dressed as Count Dracula, who would come out on a track. The doors would open from the front of the castle, and he would come out and say a speech.
Because there was a walkthrough and what you would call like a gondola ride, correct?
Well, there was a ride through on a boat, which happens to be built in the 1800s. It was the original Tunnel of Love. And we turned it into the dungeon and kind of themed it with the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay, okay. And there was live action people, real people,
yeah,
inside the boat ride, not mechanics like you would see at most places today.
No, we had, I'd say, 20 live characters in the dungeon boat ride, and we had approximately 30 live characters in the castle who all had different parts.
So you would pay to go through the dungeon and then eventually go through the walkthrough. It was two separate attractions, or
two separate attractions, or you could buy a combination ticket and do both.
I imagine that once experiencing one side of the ride, everybody would go to the second.
Everybody.
And even though that most of the people knew what was going to happen their second time around, they would still want to experience it with other people and so on and so forth, therefore purchasing more tickets once again to come back.
We had people come over and over and brought their kids, and their kids weren't old enough when they first came, and they got older and they took them through.
So how did the I'm curious, how did the entrance to the what was Dracula's speech? I remember you kind of paraphrasing it almost. Like, what did he used to say?
The mechanical one?
The mechanical one.
His speech was, "Welcome to my castle. Come in. Don't be afraid. The dead men inside will no longer hurt you." And then it was on and on, telling you about what's inside.
Is that whilst you were walking around the whole time?
You could see that from the boardwalk.
Oh, okay.
You didn't have to ride.
Okay, so it was kind of like almost advertisement almost.
It was an advertisement.
It was an advertisement to bring people in.
Right, and to get their curiosity to see, well, what's in here?
Yeah, I mean, there's videos that you have guys with chainsaws on top of the roof, you know what I mean, screaming at people on Cedar Avenue. And
well, the guy I told you made us a commercial where he pretended to be Boris Karloff, which he could do sound, you know, like change his voice and become anybody.
Like a voice actor almost?
Yeah, he was a voice actor. Okay. And he did one with Boris Karloff where he said that we took somebody up on the roof and threw him off the roof of the castle, which is 10 stories high, into the what we called like the cemetery section. It was in the boat ride section. And then we had a play where someone would run out of the castle dressed in like shorts and a t-shirt or whatever, sandals, and two goons from the castle would chase him all the way up to the front of the boardwalk and grab him by the feet and drag him up back the steps, it was like 15 steps into the castle. Then the next thing you'd see is the same two goons would pick up a dummy dressed exactly like the guy they took and throw him off the castle roof.
Oh my goodness.
And people would scream because they thought it was real.
They thought, I mean, I don't remember something like that, but I mean, I can only imagine experiencing it for the first time as a customer, as someone traveling to Wildwood, not knowing what to expect on the boardwalk at that point in time.
It was a show of its own. Exactly. Without even going into the castle.
It was the Fantasmic of Disney World.
Yes.
Put it as that.
For Wildwood, yes.
For sure.
Yes.
So, I mean, we've also done a couple other things on Wildwood Boardwalk, you and your family, that is. Let's talk a little bit about Supercade. As you said, that was your baby. That was your time, your best. Everybody knows you as the guy. The roof is on fire, like you said, pumping out the prizes. And I think your best ride as the Golden Dollar Race.
Well, how it started was, I'll give you from the start. There was a song, Pump Up the Jam or something like mm-hmm. that. And then there was also this thing about, I had this in my mind because my kids were watching the Disney program where they would say Bippity Boppity Boo. I think it was Cinderella. Mm-hmm. And that was always in my mind. So I started to say, pump out the prizes, Bip Bop Bippity Boo. And it became a saying that people would stop me even far away from here and say, hey, pumping out the prizes, Bip Bop Bippity Boo.
Yeah, and you know what? A lot of people, even all these years later, when they see you, not that you walk the boardwalk as much, but when they do see you up there, they recognize you and say all those sayings that you gave to the public and that you've created yourself. They remember you and the job that you've done and all the memories that you've created with all these different families from all over the world.
All over the world. And you brought up something, how we started the dollar race.
What did you used to charge when you first started the Derby?
I think it was $2 or $3, I don't recall exactly,
okay.
But it was probably $3. But then I would have a special and say, this race is $1. And we would give out something that we would choose. And we would pack them in because everybody wanted to play for $1.
And you can't play anywhere for $1 anymore on the boardwalk, especially
today,
in Wild. Yeah, exactly.
Today, it's a minimum of $5 and up.
But even back when you had Supercade, I don't remember it being for a race game anyway, $1 anywhere else, let alone to have a fun time. You can go somewhere and say, hey, I got $10, all 10 of us are going to play and have a good time and win something in return. It would cost a fortune to get
today,
your whole family.
It hurts me. It's a shame that the prices have gotten to be $5 to play an amusement game. Because if you have like two or three kids, that's $15 for one shot, and you might not win.
And that's what brings us back to the question that I originally asked you, you know, has Wildwood changed for the better? And honestly, I don't think a bunch of the families are as happy when they travel today as yesteryear.
Absolutely not, because there's a lot of factors. One, the motel rates have gone much higher than they were back in when I was young. The amusement games, the original price of an amusement game was state law to be 25 cents. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I did not.
And then we started a referendum, a statewide referendum, and we upped it to 50 cents. And I used to run a game for a quarter, and you work a lot of hours at a quarter. It really takes a toll. Mm-hmm. And then we went to 50 cents. It was like, wow, this is a dream.
Mm-hmm.
But in the legislation, when they did the referendum, it was up to the amusement association to keep raising the prices to what they saw fit. And today, I think it's up as high as $10 to play an amusement game, which I didn't think we thought that was going to be that way.
Wow, yeah. I mean, today, whether you look at any of these boardwalks, I mean, everybody has their gimmick and, you know, what they try to persuade the people with. We'll say it like that. Atlantic City has its hotels, its gamblings, its casinos. Seaside Heights has, you know, almost what they have over here, but they try to display it as, you know, maybe because of the Jersey Shore, the television show back in its time. Also because it's a little bit closer to the New York side of the families, that they don't have to travel as far, being that Wildwood is at the very end of the bush. You know, it's really not anywhere close to up in the north section of New Jersey. But, you know, Wildwood itself is a much bigger boardwalk. Has always, I felt, had much more to offer family-wise.
Correct.
But because of the prices today, I feel like a lot of people aren't as happy as they were around the time that Nikki's Games existed, our Supercade, or Dracula's Castle, because they could do so much more and enjoy more than one time.
You see, you brought something up. Asbury Park, Seaside Heights, they cater more to adults or young teenagers, like the show. And Wildwood was always the family place to come, where your kids can walk around the boardwalk. Like myself, at 7 or 8, I was out till 1 in the morning. Never anybody bothering anybody.
No worry, your family.
No worry.
You were with different people who your family may have trusted, have seen you with friends, other people that worked with you, for you.
Right.
A little bit different.
Wildwood was always the family destination for people all over the world who came here. It was the number one spot for families.
And I wouldn't say that it's to the point where Wildwood is, you know, invisible or a ghost town in the summer. It's not like it doesn't generate the people or the income. I'm not going to say it generates the same amount of income, but when the people make their way out of town, they don't seem to be as happy or fulfilled as they was once upon a time. Even the agents on the boardwalk, I've heard that there's people who come and play for hundreds of dollars and walk away with nothing. And, you know, that's something I always admired about your golden dollar race.
Well, see, that was my theory and my family's theory. We wanted to make it like an entertainment show.
Mm-hmm.
And for the public and their children and their family to have fun. And that way they'll remember us and want to come back to see us again when they visited Wildwood again. So a lot of times I even gave prizes to kids who didn't win, just so their families would be happy, because I seen them frown or cry.
And remember you guys going forward.
I took teddy bears off the shelf, and the little girl wanted the, or little boy wanted the teddy bear. And I think you remember that. You probably witnessed that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, here, you got it. And they would say, well, we didn't win. I said, but that's okay. I want you to walk out here smiling and not leave here sad.
And not a lot of families or a lot of businesses do that anymore. It's more about, you know, creative control, finances, a lot of disagreements. I mean, you and your brother seem to always be somewhat on the same page. Would you agree?
Absolutely. We always were together on the same page.
And what was the different roles that you and your brothers played? Because I know everybody kind of took part in something. Although it was the same business, same company, everybody had their different skill level, different skill set that they kind of took responsibility for to ensure that the business carried on the way that it did for such a substantial amount of time.
And I can give you that. My older brother, Steve, was good at the books and keeping track of expenses and rents and all that kind of stuff, and all that associated with keeping track of what we make. John, my brother, was a good inventor of amusement games. He invented several amusement games that were very successful. And
so he was like, comparing to Disney. He was more like an Imagineer.
Yes, almost. He was. He made a couple of games that were absolutely fantastic. I don't see him anymore. You don't see him.
I mean, but even if you did see them, and there was some up there today that maybe got some of their ideas from you guys, it all carries into the same family, because something maybe that you guys created back in that time.
Absolutely.
So while Steve's handling the books, making sure everything's coming in and out the way that it should, so you guys can have the finances to run some of the incredible things that you guys have, your older brother John is kind of, you know, using the funds,
mm-hmm,
to create, absolutely, everything to run at a certain point, certain amount of time, investing in all these different ideas. And then between Steve's finances that are coming in, John's creations, you're making them come alive yourself and directing the traffic, kind of delegating what should run where, how it should be, and what to move going forward to build, build, and build, and then eventually have Nichols Midway Pier and the phenomenon that it is.
And prior to that, I was the guy to make sure that his inventions actually worked by making sure that the kids or our employees will be able to do what was supposed to be done in order to generate the profits from that game.
Yep. And, you know, there's so many other things that you guys have done. Like, for example, the something that I've seen in probably about four different arcades already, the Bonanza Money Machine. I remember at one point in time, that was your guys' go-to. You know, getting inside the machine, catching real money for points that you can redeem at your guys' redemption center.
That is correct. I've seen that in a show. There's an amusement trade show every year. It's usually held in different cities. And now it's centrally located in Orlando, Florida. And I'd seen the money machine, and I came up with this concept. I said, that would be a great concept for in the arcade, is to have a method where a person can win an opportunity to actually go in there and catch the money. And forever, there was dollars, there was fives, tens, twenties. And based on the amount of money you caught in a certain amount of time, I think it was a minute or two, you would be able to trade the money in for prizes.
And then later on, I remember seeing you guys take it one step forward, something that your nephew, Jimmy, helped you create at one point in time. You guys bring something called Deal or No Deal to Supercade. And now I have to say, Angelo, not only does Wildwood do that, I think all three boardwalks, being Atlantic City and, Seaside
Sports, Asbury,
even more than three, they're all doing it. And I remember seeing that out of Supercade, gathering a crowd around Supercade like none other.
Well, just to mention that Jimmy, that you mentioned, is John's son. So he had that same kind of attitude like John to...
What can I create?
What can I create? What can I make that's different than anyone else? And he's done quite a few, but that one was one of the best. We had an actual Deal or No Deal show going on inside of Supercade.
So you would pick a case... based upon how many points you caught, whether you want to keep the points or, you know, choose a case, correct?
Well, here's how it worked. We used it during skee ball. We had a skee ball championship, which Jimmy created. And if you got the high score in skee ball, then you'd have an opportunity to go into the money machine, or you can choose one of the 15 cases. And then we'd make a deal, as just like the TV show.
So... You also had money inside those cases in some of them.
It was a Visa card, not cash.
Right. You had $25, $50, $100.
Up to $200.
And the rest was all points.
Points. Like, amount of points.
A lot of points, though.
Yeah.
Then there was some that had like almost nothing.
Had zero and some had minimum. And we would play with the guests and say, we'll give you $25,000 in points not to open the case.
Okay.
And that's how it works.
That's
kind of the deal. And then we would keep building up, and even sometimes we pretend we're talking to someone, say, you know, like they did on the show with the calling the guy and see if that's okay.
What do you want to do going forward? Exactly. So, you know, you wrap up all these things, Nichols Midway Pier, that is, Dracula's Castle, the Derby, Deal or No Deal, Bonanza Money Machine, everything that was kind of created from you and your family. Would you say you had how many family members would you say worked at one point in time between all of you?
Counting all my nephews, at least 15.
So 15 nephews and them having kids growing up, nieces, of course.
Of course.
And all these people that have grown to know the Nichols family and worked with them for their entire lives, because, you know, the people who you guys brought on kind of stayed with you guys for as long as they could. And some people...
Even non-family members, I have kids that started working for me at 10 and stayed with me until their late 20s and some 30s.
Yes. And I don't think that there'll be another pier like Nichols Midway Pier, just because what it stood for at its time. And although I'm not trying to dock anybody, like, there are business owners up there that do the absolute best that they can.
I'm sure.
And they try to keep that same flow going, but times have changed. Some things may look better and look more fun here and there to, you know, different people who are interested in different things. But just in general, I kind of always felt, growing up in Wildwood, having the childhood that I had, experiencing all these different things, taking part in all these different projects and watching them take place, it was a childhood like no other. And I don't think that I could give my two sons the childhood my mother and father gave me, just based upon how things ran at that point in time.
That's an absolute truth. And I've got friends, the one I told you we shine shoes with, he talks about this all the time, that the experience that we had growing up on the boardwalk, and then he actually became a game operator for my family, later on went to work for Fun Pier. And his take is the same thing. You can't replace that era of Wildwood today. It's a different boardwalk. It's a different mindset.
A different atmosphere altogether.
Different atmosphere. And it's not the Wildwood it was back then.
No. But, you know, there's always hope. And things do take their turn for their worse, and they get better in time. So we can only hope for the best and hope that everybody that comes down here do enjoy and keep the memories alive and all the stories that we talk. We learned a lot today. A lot of history was taught to us today on this show about Wildwood. A little behind the scenes action of the Nichols family and Nichols Midway Pier. And we got to know Angelo Nichols inside and out of the business and what he stood for as a game operator and a family man altogether. As we close the show, Angelo, I want you to give us that that supercade pumping out the prizes the way that you used to back in the day. For all the fans that are going to watch and know you from back in their time, exactly how did you used to do it when you were calling the races? Give it to us before we close off the show.
Well, again, when I ran the race game, I had a booth that was a little bit higher up than were the people who actually worked the floor. And I was almost like a TV host. And I would say on a microphone, I had a lot of different things. We had the Macy's race, the $100 race, prizes, meaning. And what I started doing is, based on those two things of the music pumping out the jam and bip-bop, bippity-boo from the cartoon, I used to say, pumping out the prizes, pumping out the prizes, bip-bop, bippity-boo.
And then you had another, you used to, something about the roof. Like, people used to come in and play for prizes hanging above their head. Not one or two, 30 prizes on the ceiling.
Much more. We had, the arcade was very large. And I purposely put all kinds of characters. Basically, another saying, I put lions, tigers, and bears. Because that was another saying. And then there was a special race. I would get you to it by saying, in 10 minutes, we're going to play for the roof. Anything hanging above your head. And then I would start saying, the roof, the roof, the roof will be your prize. And I used to say, the roof is on fire.
Yeah, and everybody used to just look above their head and say, wow, like, what are we about to win? Because you couldn't even when you ran for $2, you couldn't win a prize like that. We're talking about prizes that were bigger than most human beings that they would walk
some of them
with.
Yes.
And I remember, you know, seeing people take them down. I'm sure that it was not an easy job.
Well, actually, we didn't take them down in the beginning. We used to do that on Labor Day weekend. But during the summer, we had the prizes in the race game. We'd have to send somebody in our bottom warehouse to bring up a certain amount of those prizes.
That's correct. That's correct.
We didn't want to be doing that.
The warehouse was underneath with a whole bunch of stuff from all your guys' inventory.
Which was a city of like a Kmart down there.
And you guys, you know, just before we go off the air, you guys had a couple fires, you know, like the arcade got destroyed a couple times and you guys kept rebuilding to get it to where...
We did. There was one fire that destroyed just the front parts and the original arcade and the original Supercade. And then we rebuilt the new Supercade and that didn't have a fire.
Wow. Okay. So you guys recreated what you could based upon what you had and kept it rolling for as long as you guys could.
Well, we started the Nichols Midway Pier was opened in 1976 and we left it in 2010. That's over 30 some years, I think.
And everything, you know something, this is what I've learned in my history of talking to all these different people and guests that I've had the pleasure of speaking with. Everything has its beginning. Everything has its end.
That's
but
true.
More importantly, it's always good that you make it a great ending. Some stuff is not meant to be dragged out forever. Sometimes things need to know when it's time to pack up because they've had the impact that they've needed to have. and they've done the job what was needed to be done. Although other people may go on into different things that are similar to what they were doing. Nothing is forever, like we said, and we have to be happy with what we had and what it worked for, what we made it into, and what we've learned from it. We've learned a lot from you and your brothers, your entire family, and we've seen some of the greatest things happen here in Wildwood because of the Nichols family. So we want to say thank you on behalf of Real Talk Podcast to you, Angelo Nichols, for coming on the show.
It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. We hope to see you again.
You will.
And I can't wait to see what the show brings going forward, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who want to get out their story and share some similar things that you have. And that's what Real Talk Podcast stands for. Basically, people coming on, sharing their experiences of things that they've done, or talking about things that they're about to do. All in all, this is the best podcast, in my opinion, not because I run it, only because it gives everybody a chance to talk real. And that's what we stand for. So I appreciate your time. I appreciate you coming down. Thank you very much, Angelo. And I'm sure we'll see you again real soon.
You shall. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
You never turn.